Thought Leadership from PwC.
If you look at this more holistically, you could actually solve a much bigger problem. You can start to string together automations. You could look at, you know, the real ROI on this and make sure that it's worth it. And some of the ROI can be not just saving hours, but giving insight that you didn't previously have access to.
Continuing our Finance 2025 series with a conversation focused on how tools can enable the augmented finance organization, this is PwC's Accounting Podcast. I'm Heather Horn, and thanks so much for joining us today. When PwC completed our most recent finance effectiveness benchmarking study, we found that the number one component finance leaders believe will be critical to modernizing the finance function is improving technology. But as most who work in finance these days know, that's a really big bucket of potential projects to sift through and a lot of questions that come up in the process. Where do I start? What tools will give me the most return on investment? How do I involve my people? In the world of automation, tools, and technology, it sometimes seems like a daily challenge to stay on top of what you need to know as the landscape changes. Our guest today is here to help us make sense of all of this, the tools aspect of finance transformation, the things that humans use on a daily basis to augment their work. Think robotic process automation, intelligent process automation, data visualization, and the like. Tabitha DeFrancisco, a partner in PwC's finance transformation practice, advises finance leaders as they optimize the efficiency of their function and the insights they provide to the business. Tabitha leads large-scale transformations to bring back offices into the digital age. She's a wealth of experience to share with us, and we have a lot to cover, so let's get started. So Tabitha, thanks so much for joining us today. And I'm so excited to get a chance to talk to you about augmented finance and specifically tools and technology. And before we get into some of the details, thought it'd be just helpful for our audience to understand some of your background and how you got into this area.
Yeah, Heather, so great to meet with you as well. And really looking forward to this topic because it's been one I've, you know, spent a lot of time thinking about over the past couple of years, helping clients solve challenges with what's kind of changing in their environment. And so I've spent about almost 15 years doing finance transformations for clients. With that comes, you know, a bit of org design, process improvement, and then deployment of technology to really optimize the way that they work. And through that, that's where I really come across needing better tools to help clients solve problems that are just unique and kind of growing. And so it's not been enough to just kind of use the tools of the past to say, let's just reshuffle you, put you in central locations, maximize the use of an ERP. That's only gotten my clients so far. Now they need to take it to the next level. So that's really how I've gotten involved heavily in more of an augmented finance.
All right. So before we'll rewind to the practical, but before we do that, I think often when people think about tools and they think about, you know, finance, it's sort of this robots running the finance department. And I'm guessing that's not what you're going to tell us, but do you ever see a time when that is what is happening?
No, and I think the term augmented is really key here. That really is meant to supplement and give a whole new level of tools to finance professionals. It really is not meant to fully replace. You know, the more transactional the process, the more applicable the automation may be, or the more easier it is to stand up. But really, it's meant to support finance functions to allow them to unlock another level of service that they haven't historically been able to do.
So basically, when I was like a young staff, which was a very long time ago, we used what we called 8-column. Everything's handwritten. You know, you had your calculator, and then computers were a big thing. And so I guess this is the next evolution of the effectively computer. Is that fair?
That's right. Yep. That's a great way to think about it, is this isn't the first time we've encountered a whole new way of working, going from paper and calculators to computers. This is definitely the next kind of frontier of that. That's right. That's a great way to think about it.
Well, we say that, I do think there is a feeling, particularly with some more entry-level people or other people that are doing more sort of data processing types of things, that they are going to be replaced, or there are fears with this, or maybe from a more senior perspective that they don't really understand the tools that, you know, their teams are using. And for example, they know Excel, but then suddenly there's these new complex tools that they never used growing up. And then now, you know, obviously they don't have necessarily time, or maybe it's not their highest and best use to learn how to use them. So how do you address that discussion?
Yeah, this is one that comes up almost at every client. The good news is the fear of job loss has, especially in today's environment, started to become less of an issue. It's still a concern. You still have people that have a lot of ownership over their process. They know how to do it really well. They've optimized it to the extent they can. And they are a little bit worried about what does this look like when they're no longer needed for that task. And in fact, those are my favorite people to work with, because you can start to turn on the light bulbs with what else they could be doing. How could they take it to the next level? How could a AP processor get much more analytical and think about, here's what we're seeing, where we can optimize our transaction between the vendors, or insight I could give back to supply chain based on the data that I have access to now in AP, where now I'm no longer heads down going through AP processes, trying to get invoices through as quickly as I can. If I can automate a lot of that, now I'm much more in a position to be analytical and think about what am I seeing in the data that I could use to inform leadership or inform another function. So that's one way we've really been able to address from a staff point of view. From leadership, that this is actually kind of the growing challenge that I really see, that leaders like the idea, they want to get on board, they're quick to say like, yeah, let's get a use case up and running. But where really the rubber meets the road is whenever you need to start to do this at scale and you no longer have the one or two examples and opportunities, but now you've really got to think about the way you work, and it dramatically will change from what it looks like today. And that is a challenge. So what I've seen be most effective there is a bit of cross-mentoring. Now you've got more junior resources coming in that are eager to use these tools, and you've got senior leadership, which thinks the way the business thinks. And sometimes, you know, that's really where I think there's a great marriage. If you've got a junior resource, they can spend almost too much time into the technologies. And so really making sure that they get that kind of cool, full, well-rounded business perspective, while at the same time feel empowered to educate leaders with what these tools can do. So whereas before you might have had more of a very, you know, senior people kind of knew everything and just educated and trained the more junior people, now you've got this kind of cross-mentoring, cross-coaching that is available for staff now. So it's changed the dynamic, but I think in a good way.
All right, I want to come back to that. But before we do, why don't we, we said this episode's about tools. So let's get to the tools and the technology, and then we'll come back to some of the applications. So what are some of the key sort of transformational tools that you are seeing companies use right now? And what are some of the benefits that you're seeing?
Yep. So specifically within finance, and I think it will be a little bit different depending on the function. But for finance, the three biggest tools that we've seen really augment the way they work are your standard kind of RPA functionality, which is robot kind of entering, extracting. The next, I would say, data transformation. So tools that allow you to go through a workflow to clean up data and prep it for any analytics or reporting or a particular process. And then the third is data visualization. So I can give examples of some of those tools if that would be helpful.
Let's start with the first one. So when we say RPA, robotics, correct? Is that
That's
what
right.
we're talking about?
All
right.
right.
So what do you see within the area of RPA?
Yeah. So some of the most well-known brands out there, vendors are like UiPath, Blue Prism, Automation Anywhere. Microsoft is also has a growing platform in this space. And so those are usually the standard kind of RPA functionality, the biggest players. There's many out there. But they do a lot of what used to be kind of programmed behind the scenes, and it just puts that in the hands of the users to be able to do their own programming without knowing coding knowledge. They're able to kind of drag and drop and point and use more advanced coding without having to know code. That's kind of your standard RPA. When it comes to kind of the next tranche, the data transformation, the key players out there are Alteryx, Trifecta, Nime. Some of those are the more advanced tools. And those allow, again, a kind of repeat data cleanup, data processing, large amounts of data. What you used to do in Excel, you would do now in these tools, or use this to heavily augment what you're doing in Excel. And then from a data visualization, again, lots of platforms out there, but the ones that we still see that are leading practice are Tableau. We see still Qlik. We see Microsoft products as well. And so so those are still kind of the suite of what I would probably put in the hands of everyday users. And again, there's a lot of other tools that I think are a great asset to everyday users. But that's where I would start with in terms of training non-technical, non-coding individuals on how to automate their own processes and use better tools.
So let's say I have a team, I've given them the tools. What's a fair expectation? It can't be that they all are using all of these tools. Do you specialize? Do you expect each year people to learn at least one? Like, what's sort of a good way to upskill your team?
So I think we definitely don't expect everyone to have these tools, right? We did this within our own firm. Everybody took an in-depth training to learn how to use them, but I would say not everybody uses them on a daily basis, and some of them rarely use them, but even being knowledgeable of what they can do is a huge unlock. So I do think you're going to have those that are really gravitate towards this type of technology. Those are the individuals that you really want to give new challenges to, help them get the right training that they can actually automate some of their processes and be really heavily involved with IT with more complex automations. Then you have those that are more, maybe more in leadership position, as you mentioned earlier, managers plus, you're not really going to spend as much time learning the technical. For those individuals, you really want them to just to make it real for them, real use cases, even getting their hands in it just long enough that they can actually see what these tools can do, because then they're in a better position to guide their teams and encourage them to try new ways of working. Without that, sort of like a black box that they really don't know what they're going to get. And so when time gets tough or you're under pressure, you're going to quickly move away from those tools. So I really think just getting a holistic training education on these tools in a much more immersive way is a really good way to start. But then I would expect, you know, kind of split them up into three buckets. You're going to have a third that are going to be slow adopters, a third that are going to need to know quite a bit about the tools, but are never going to really do a heavy build, and a third that are going to really want to kind of immerse in it, either heavily collaborating on the build or doing the build themselves.
So you brought up the fact, even within our firm, that we deployed these tools. And one of the things that I saw is, you know, you have your training and people become familiar, but it's still not that same spreadsheet tool that you're sort of used to. And then, so to your point, when things get stressful or anything else, the leader might say, well, but I can't look at the formula, or I don't understand this as well. Can you please show me in a tool that I understand? Like, they don't necessarily trust the results. So how do you kind of go over, sort of cross that bridge and get people comfortable that maybe it doesn't work the same way as what they've seen before, but those are still good results?
Yeah. So when, and I think it depends on the technology. When it comes to RPA, that's a bit more difficult because you're really getting into the weeds there, trying to even just follow what was built. So that I would engage a lot more with IT to validate that that looks accurate, that we've, you know, put the right controls in place to make sure that if anything breaks, that, you know, it works. And that is a little bit also easier to evaluate the effectiveness, just because you can see, did it work or not? Did it send the email? Did it pull the file down? So the outcome is much easier to observe. When you get more into data transformation, that's the one, again, this is where I see a big unlock as a reviewer, and often not the person building. I actually think the ability to review what happened and how they transform the data is a lot more robust in these tools than it was in Excel. Because in Excel, I'm going to copy something, I'm going to paste it, I'm going to do, you know, my fancy work. And it's very, very difficult to follow that chain. You can do it, but it takes a long time sometimes to just follow a very long formula that gets you to the punchline. Very different in these tools. These other tools that allow you to do this more in an automated way, I can actually see what box did you click, what box did you unclick. You know, I can kind of see how you did it. And so it's just reorienting the way that I understand the flow to be and what's really going on here. And I think that's the big education for a reviewer. So that it's actually much easier to see a workflow and a data cleanup in those tools than it is for me to figure out what they did in Excel.
All right. And I know, you know, a lot of our listeners will have either been dabbling in them, maybe their companies are big adopters of these tools, but it's the beginning of the year, so it's always a good time to sort of fresh start and say, okay, how can I do things better? And so no matter sort of where you are on this spectrum of adoption, what are some of the things that you're doing in terms of things that you can do that are fast, cost efficient, sort of from a scale perspective?
So I've seen kind of, I guess, I'll give you the two ends of the spectrum for the entry here. One that's a very, very slow, like, let's get a very targeted use case, let's build momentum, let's deploy one tool. I've seen that end of the spectrum, which you can do. It gives you a very one-off, tangible, this actually works for us. More companies are moving away from that because they want to start to see more of the speed and the return, and they want to get a lot more out of their program. So more moving more towards, let's do this at scale. Let's deploy the toolkit instead of going with just a hammer and look for how do we use a hammer. Let's go in with the three major tools we know that we need, a hammer, a screwdriver, and a drill. And let's figure out how can we best make the use of this and build what we need to build to drive much more efficiencies. And to do that, it takes a very targeted effort, having a focus on a couple of use cases out of the gate, start to build your pipeline so you know what you're going to build next. And then the education, I think, is also really key here. So, and then ultimately, leadership buy-in, leadership support, that top-down is really critical as well. Without that, I see teams really fumble through and try and get momentum and try and get some scale. But when you've got a leadership support that really sees this as the future and really challenges their team to think differently and thinks with that very transformative mindset, that's where we really start to see this move quickly and the benefits get unlocked much quicker.
So one of the challenges, though, that I can see is that, you know, in the early stages, there was a lot of, okay, that person, to your point, a third of the people who become heavy users, they've got a great use case or they've got a good idea. So they kind of go off and do that. And then as long as their organization is supportive, then, you know, they're changing things around the edges. But now let's say, okay, we know it can work in our organization. How do you really go from, I've got these few use cases, to doing something that is much bigger, much more transformative, particularly if, let's say, the leader of the organization themselves maybe doesn't know how to use the tool. So maybe it's a little harder for them to visualize where it could be impactful.
Yeah. So they'll give one answer that's, I think, easier for organizations to stand up, and the other that's been a little bit more of a challenge. The first is setting up a center of excellence to really drive prioritization is critical. Without that, you've got somebody who does this job day in, day out. They want to save a couple hours. That's, you know, changing their life or impacting their life. But if you look at this more holistically, you could actually solve a much bigger problem. You can start to string together automations. You could look at, you know, the real ROI on this and make sure that it's worth it. And some of the ROI can be not just saving hours, but giving insight that you didn't previously have access to. So I think that's fairly straightforward to stand up. We do that quite often. The bigger challenge that I see is kind of where does this sit and who does what? Because this is now still this hybrid role. You've got somebody who needs to deeply understand the finance implications. You can't just be a technical builder, but also you can't be without any kind of understanding what the technologies can do. That's where it kind of gets stalled. You either have very technical people, and this is stood up in maybe an IT function and operates more as an extension of IT, and they struggle to fully understand what the business is trying to achieve. So they don't really fully get the unlock that they're hoping for. Or a function is trying to do it, but they lack some of the technical know-how. And so then they're also trying to like muddle their way through it. And so really the perfect kind of marriage there is when you can have a joint team that has both technical and deeply functional resources. And that's, by the way, the teams that I'm building to deploy this are really going to be a combination of both, because you really truly need both.
All right. So then again, if I'm the controller of an organization, I'm ready. It's beginning of 2022 and I'm going to go all in on this. Can you give us some examples of where you've seen this work well with specific functions within accounting? So for example, reconciliations, balance sheet schedules, I don't know, whatever good examples you have, I'm sure our audience would be happy to hear.
Yep. We do a lot of use cases, definitely in the accounts payable process, because that's often you can't control the formatting in all cases of the invoices. A lot of clients of ours still have vendors that are sending either manual invoices or just have a mix of how they're getting that data from their vendors. So we still do a lot in the accounts payable space. Accounts receivable is the other area that we have quite a bit of use cases around, where they're applying cash or being able to even just sort the collections process, send out emails, things like that. So we do a lot with RPA in those two spaces.
So can I pause you there? So I think, and we maybe should have made this point up front, the point you're making is that these tools work really well with unstructured data. So, you know, at most accountants, if you've got like a nice data set, everything's neat and tidy and it all works, then your traditional tools work well there. But as soon as you have things that are formatted differently or look differently, or to your point, some are manual, some are electronic, that's where it's the traditional tools don't work. But then applying these types of tools, you're saying you can automate a process even though all your data inputs are varying.
That's right. Yeah. That's why I think the term augmented here is key, because it's not meant to replace what an ERP can do, a big system can do, but there's still a lot that falls between the cracks. There's a lot that doesn't get handled that requires third-party data. Or for example, if I use AP, direct spend is usually easily solved for an ERP. Indirect is not always the first priority. And so there's always something that kind of gets, you know, left off the table whenever it comes to IT. And where they spend their time, they're going to spend time on the much bigger processes, much higher volumes of data, which is where they should be, which is where we want them. then there's still, like I said, like quite a bit that gets left between the cracks. And then definitely when it comes to more data analytics, data prep, or even just understanding the health and the performance of your process, we spend a lot of time just automating that data aggregation and data analysis. And so really data is kind of where we probably spent quite a bit more time recently. But still there's quite a bit, right? So like RPA, anything transactional, any sending of emails, pulling of files, entering of data, still using quite a bit of RPA for those activities that fall in between the systems. And then, like I said, data prep, there's a very, I think, a pretty big untapped opportunity there, both in process analytics, as well as prepping data for financial reporting and management reporting.
So can you get a little deeper on that? So when you say data prep, what level of preparation are you saying? The raw data? Is it the actual financial statements, or where does it fall on that spectrum?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. So you have multiple uses of data. Some of it, usually if it's external reporting, that's a bit smoother, right? You're bringing in the data the way you need it. You're sending it out the way you need it. But any other alternative use, whether it be management reporting or even tax reporting, that often is where there's a breakdown. The data isn't always structured in the way that you need to for all of those purposes. So, or like I said, some of it may be external, like you're doing, you know, bonus calcs outside the system, or you've got a plan that you're kind of modeling out a couple different scenarios outside the system, and ultimately you'll load the final plan. But anything that basically, you know, isn't clean, clear, structured with the same data every time, that is where we see a lot of Excel models that kind of go rogue. I've seen an 80-tab Excel spreadsheet before that was then used to build the plan, then load it into a file. You know, I see those all the time. And if I had a dollar for every time I found an error in those models, I probably would be a millionaire. so that's what we try to address, is how do you create a repeatable, rules-driven process to even unstructured data to get it to the place where it's ready then to be loaded to a system or available for the system, or you can get more out of the data, right? You can look at different scenarios that you may not want to mess with your system and change any kind of dimensions in your system, but you can see what it do if we were to split this business segment out? What would it do if we were to, you know, merge these two together? What would it do if we were to reshuffle regions and geographies? And you can do that without first going straight into your ERP or your system, your bigger systems, to be able to model it out, right? You want to be able to see what that looks like before you make a change like that.
So Tabitha, it's interesting. I was actually talking to the CAO of a large public company, and she was talking about the fact that when she thinks about data, she has her external reporting data, which obviously has to be very high quality, auditable, et cetera. And that's where I'm used to looking at data, because, you know, I come from an audit background. But then she made the point that, especially now, considering everything that's happened in the pandemic, so much decision making needs to be done so quickly that maybe getting 90% of the way there is good enough, or 80%, because it's internal. People can understand maybe the, you know, failings or otherwise. So how does these different tools fit into sort of that fast decision-making, and maybe recognizing that you're not going to have that same high quality data that you might need for external reporting?
I mean, this is why I think these tools have such a place, you know, because of that exact reason, because every time, and what's kind of been challenging for some to see is it doesn't take me that long to build the Excel model to do this quickly. That's once, but then you get a new refresh data set and you've got to do it again, right? And unless you're good at building macros, which many are not in finance, there's a select few, but really most are not. So be able to quickly pivot and make changes is much easier when you've pre-built a workflow versus when you're trying to rebuild it from scratch. Maybe each individual time takes less, like to build the Excel model doesn't take as much time, but every time you need to repeat that, that's where the time gets, you know, the time suck is. And we hear finance people all the time say, I haven't, you know, usually I'm quickly turning. I have a very small window between the results coming out and having to report out that, you know, I basically don't have time to think about the data. And when we deploy these tools and introduce this, I had one use case where we use this for a global business case for a very strategic program. And to do it once, that's fine. But then we had to do a quick turnaround and multiple times. And that's what would really be time consuming for them. And we cut out the 80% of the time it took to do that. And by the end of it, the person we were working with on the client side said, Tabitha, I haven't had to think this much and so critically. Like, I mean, I can actually think about what would my business partner want to see, and like, how can I structure this, and how do I enable them to make quick decisions and do quick pivots on the data? Another use case we did was for an IT finance function. And before we even got to the end of it,
they were using it to report out to their business partner so they could quickly pivot and see the flexibility in the data that they didn't previously have whenever you're extracting it, putting it in Excel, putting it into a PowerPoint. You can't quickly pivot and answer questions. So in terms of to enable quick decision-making and quick analysis and understand what's happening, and I think these tools actually enable that much more than the tools that we use to work with.
So one of the questions is a good lead in into where we sort of started with the pairing and sort of the more senior person who maybe has the knowledge, the more junior person who's good with the tools. One of the things that I always think is interesting is, you know, we talk about data, we talk about data visualization, we talk about analytics, and there is also that balance, right, of like sort of data overload. Mm-hmm. And so how do you manage? Well, I guess two questions here. We'll start with data visualization. I think we've all seen such cool, you know, so many cool ways you can visualize data. But then is finance data consistent? Like, does visualization apply to all data, or how do you pick and choose which data it's sort of the best use for?
It's really anything that allows you to evaluate the performance is a great use case. So before, we were only looking at the data visualization in more of the reporting function, but actually quite a bit of my use cases have been, how do we deploy that within the more transactional space? So the AP example that I gave, you know, we could automate a lot of the, you know, prep and review and calculating, you know, the performance of that process. But once you actually visualize it and you can see, okay, how are we tracking in terms of overall process effectiveness, like that's where I think really anywhere that like can go in anywhere from process performance all the way through like financial performance and anything in between. Like I mentioned, how do we restructure the data? Do we carve out part of the segment? Do we merge this together? What would it look like if we were to shuffle geography? So really, I think there's not much that that couldn't benefit from better use of data and better diving into the data. But to your point, I mean, that's not the whole story. Often understanding the context in which you're operating, what are the strategic initiatives of the company? That's the other piece of this. This isn't just data for data's sake. It has to be serving a bigger purpose. We've definitely seen companies overdo it and have, you know, 50 to 100 metrics on a very small process, which then just don't really help. And you have two full-time resources dedicated to calculating that, like that's not a great probably use. It's really thinking about what are we trying to measure, how are we trying to drive certain behaviors, or how are we trying to measure major changes that we're trying to make and make sure that that's actually as effective as we think as we deploy new automations. So yeah, I think wide breadth, I know that's kind of a broad answer, but really I think it is everything from how good is this process? How effective is it? All the way to like, what decisions can we make now that we've got access to this? How can we find certain customers that we could prevent stack out? That was another use case. So I think the use cases are quite broad, and then getting more out of each dashboard also, I think, is an unlocked opportunity in most organizations. Just because it's an AP dashboard looking at AP performance doesn't mean it couldn't be used by procurement or supply chain to say, let me see my vendor mix and makeup and what kind of terms that we're operating under and how do we optimize that. Yeah, so I think that the use cases are quite broad. I think they're just, they still tend to be executed in somewhat silos.
So then let me go back to your point of like small process, you've got like 100 metrics, because I do think sometimes as soon as you figure out you can have the information, it's hard to say, but do I really need that information? And so, you know, sort of that balancing act of like, well, I've always had this, but maybe it's not the most useful and I would be better off dedicating my resources elsewhere. How do you see companies grappling with some of those kinds of decisions? Or are we still too early in this to really be having to deal too much with that?
No, I think that that's where it needs to go. Because again, now that you can actually step back and think about what do you want to see and how do you want to see it, like that should be a natural part of this. It shouldn't be, you know, if we're asked to just stand up the analytics and not actually get the chance to think about what makes sense and how are you measuring and what are you going to do with these metrics, then I feel like we've not done our job well. You know, we can come in and we can do that, but I would prefer not to. I'd prefer to really think about like, what is most helpful to you? What would you like to see? Or here's what we're seeing in the data. What would you like to see more of? So I think it really has to go hand in hand with this. Otherwise, there's a huge unlocked opportunity and you've got a bunch of dashboards that aren't really doing much.
So it sounds like you have to be willing to experiment. So try different processes, look at different types of information, and then see what really is going to help you manage the business and be willing to be ruthless if you don't need it. Yep. And then to continue to pursue that data or that analysis that's going to help you the most.
Yep. The other way we've seen clients address this for specifically for financial reporting, because there's usually a proliferation of management reports that sometimes conflict and different functions have their own report. And even different functions manage the same budget, but differently. So what we see is that many clients are starting to use a shared platform where they can post these, where they can look for the how many times it's being utilized. And they've run it through more of a central platform in order to control some of that. So if you ask for a sales report and you want just a slightly different cut of it, the first question is, does these five reports that we have, do these actually meet the need? Or what do you truly need that's different? Or is there something that we can add to one of these reports that gives you that additional slice of the data that you need, rather than having yet another dashboard we need to maintain and data that we need to be making sure the quality is there? So that's the other way that it's been really effective at managing that specifically for management reporting.
So I know in your role and the different types of projects you work on, there's also the change management element in terms of getting people, you know, we talked about adopting the tools, but then even with these reports, the analysis and everything else. So any advice from a change management perspective?
I think this is the one that can't be rushed. Like, there is an evolution. Learning a whole new way of working and thinking, it takes time, but it goes quicker whenever there's the right support from the top down and they carve out the space and time to be able to immerse in this, and that you've got really good use cases that really show the point and good partners that can help educate you as you go through it and make sure that you're thinking about it the right way. That's where I've seen the light bulbs turn on much quicker for my clients, is whenever I can sit through a process with them. Usually we'll have the vendor join us as well. The vendor's walking through the technical of what can be done, and I'll be walking through, well, here's what you should be thinking about from a finance person. What else you could be getting out of this? And that sounds like it could be a good use case, but you mentioned something else that's over here. So having somebody kind of guide them through that so that they're thinking about this and not just giving the one or two examples that they think are applicable without knowing the technology, but that they come in with an open mind and you've got leadership that's really supporting them in this kind of journey, this education.
So then that's a great lead into my next question, which is, we've talked a little bit about people being in different places on this journey, but I do get the sense there are at least some companies that they've deployed all of this technology, you know, they're using it maybe in some way, but maybe they feel like they're not getting the most out of it. And so how do you address that question? Do you kickstart it? You know, what do you do if you just feel like you could be doing more? Where would you go with that?
We know where the typical breakdowns are, and it's rarely that the technology isn't working. The technology is really good. It's very strong. It's all about how it's managed. How is it? What's the intake process look like? Do you have the right technical experts that are open to understanding what the real business need is here? Do you have a hybrid team, like what I mentioned, around technical and functional resources? That's where I really see it fall down, is when it ends up just being, you know, in a delivery factory and you don't have functional people involved, they tend to be very frustrated. They're not getting more out of it than they thought, but they also don't necessarily know how to kind of guide the technical resources. So it's, you know, shared ownership for sure. But that's really where I see, so we kind of know where the common issues are, and then it's really just tackling those, either building a playbook that has a more robust approach to how the business would be involved, or thinking about the tools that we can put in place that do just the automatic capture of a process so that it doesn't get stalled with a finance person that's trying to do their day job and document a process design document. So that's, you know, what we're exploring now, is how do we actually make it much more efficient and effective for us to gather that data, or the technical resources to gather the data they need to build the right solutions. The other thing that I often see is really just deploying the one tool. Like, so this is a common issue that I see where they've put RPA in, they've tried to solve as much as they can with RPA, but that alone was not enough, right? You can only do so much with a screwdriver. You can only do so much with, you know, one of those tools in your toolkit. So that's usually when we come in and say, well, that's because you needed a drill for this and you needed the hammer over here, you know, and if you kind of combine all three of these, you can get a lot more out of it. So it makes sense why you kind of are disillusioned by RPA, because it didn't do what you expected, but that's because it wasn't meant to do all of the data prep and data visualization. It wasn't meant to do everything, or you've kind of stopped at the point at which you can actually unlock a lot of insight from the data. So we've done that with collections process. We can automate the sending of the email. We can automate a lot around it. But where the real unlock is then you can actually analyze it, look at the performance, and you're able to actually, again, play a better role with your either the sales function or with the customer service to be able to get more out of the data, right? So that's where we see is just being able to cross over into territory that may be outside of your domain and cross into tools that may, you know, help you stretch it and stretch the opportunities a little bit more. That's, you know, so again, we know where the bodies are usually buried. We know where the challenges are for most clients and really is tackling those individual opportunities.
So to the point of opportunities, then say, you know, you have these opportunities, but people are obviously resource constrained right now. And you made the point, this is not something you can just hand off to someone else. And so how do you balance sort of getting the day job done with putting in place some of these, let's say, I'll just call them all together, augmentation tools? How do you balance that? I know it's going to save time in the long run, but I don't have time to do it right now.
So what has been really key for all these projects we've done in this space is having at least one person that can be dedicated internally to really drive this for the functions, that can really be sort of an internal consultant to help them, you know, gather the documents they need, do what they need, basically it's really supplement the day-to-day functional needs. And then really, like, our goal is there's a little bit of tension at the beginning. Anytime you're trying to improve something, it puts a little bit of tension on the system. It feels like it's easier just to do what you've always been doing. But you know, if you can just spend the time to kind of build a better machine, build a better tool, build a better way of working, it's better for you in the long run. And so there is a bit of a tension, but the goal is that we should be freeing up capacity. And what companies should expect to see is that you see capacity freed up so that people can actually spend the time to actually invest back into it. And it may not be full time across the board, but even just spending, you know, a quarter of their time, it usually invigorates people that have just kind of been in this rut of doing the same thing over and over again, feeling like they keep running into challenges that they can't address. They feel much more kind of, you know, almost motivated to solve the problems, to do things differently. That's more often what I'm seeing. I think if there's literally zero capacity to do any of this, then usually I ask, why is that the case? What are you doing that maybe you shouldn't be doing? Or how much is really manual in your space that is preventing you from actually stepping back and being able to think about how you could do it differently or supporting an initiative and an automation that makes your life easier on a day-to-day? So usually it's very rare that I see that there truly is zero capacity to find, especially when they start telling me what they do, that I can usually see there's a ton of opportunity there. If you just give me, you know, a couple of weeks, we can actually make your life a lot easier in that space, and then you will have capacity.
So it's almost like get a toehold. And then as soon as you do that, you get a little more and a little more.
That's right.
You just have to get started, it sounds like.
That's right. Exactly.
So then when you're meeting with, let's say, someone who hasn't decided to take on one of these projects, so they're still evaluating, what are some of the concerns that you're hearing that maybe we haven't talked about yet?
There's definitely the reputation of, you know, I've heard of a company deploying this and they didn't get anything out of it. And so we can usually address quite a bit of that. The other major concern is just how do we get the skills in-house that we need to support a program like this? That's a big shift. The supply is just not there and the demand is significant. And so being able to bring in people or train up your own people, it's a huge undertaking. And so that's a lot of the discussions we're having now is how can we do this to find that balance between acquiring external resources and then also what level do we need to train our internal resources for this to be effective? Because they foresee that this is going to be a skill gap. And I think it's rightfully so that it is, there's definitely going to be a gap in the market. And the only way we're going to solve that is to be able to create the time and space to invest in developing resources internally, as well as acquiring external resources.
All right. Let me ask you then about a new tool or something that I guess is more hot off the press, and that would be process intelligence. That's right. So can you explain for our listeners who maybe haven't heard that term, what that is and what sort of the purpose?
Yep. So this definitely is a leading trend. Many of my clients are talking about this. It's using tools. Celonis is one in the market that we see pretty regularly. There's other tools that UiPath actually now has a product that allows them to capture the process as well. So what it is it's basically pulling very detailed transactional data and able to basically recreate the process so that you can look for deviations in the process. And usually where there's deviations is where there's either manual or workarounds or rework that's required. And then we can go deeper into that. But it's basically accelerates a lot of what we would do. I could use these tools to analyze, for example, for one client, a procure to pay process, but it takes me aggregating data across multiple systems, defining all of the metrics, and then sort of manually creating what these technologies already do. Whereas a tool like Celonis and others in the market, they will actually be able to do that in a much more accelerated way. And they're used to taking and ingesting large amounts of data. So it's not running through just your desktop to try and do some of these analytics, and you're not creating them from scratch, but it would allow you to basically accelerate. If I take it all the way from a purchase order through invoice payment, where are all of the blocks? Where are all of the stops that happen along the way? And then I can hone in on that specific data to really accelerate automation build, or how do I better use my ERP to address those type of issues as well? Or sometimes it's a policy procedure that needs to be put in place to address it. So it really is just accelerating rapidly an assessment of where the opportunities are.
All right. Sounds like more to come on that. So final question for you, and this one's a little different than what I sometimes ask, but I think it's important in this area of technology. So if you're talking to young finance professionals, so maybe people who are just entering the field, how would you talk to them about thinking about these tools and thinking about them as a complement perhaps to their own skills?
Yeah, I'll give the example of one of the people on my team that has really took my advice here and run with it. And so he started with us maybe 4 years ago. And I told him, you really want to differentiate yourself. You want to operate as a finance person that's really able to drive and solve, you know, new issues. You want to be extremely valuable to the people that you work for. Pick up these tools. These are the tools that you need. I don't expect you to build bots all day long, but data transformation is really core of what we do. Data visualization, I think, is another aspect of that that's critical for users, right? For managers, for leaders, to be able to understand what you did and why it's valuable. And so he did. He took it. He ran with it. And I could tell you that he is one of our top performers, you know, constantly because of this. So it really is a way you differentiate yourself. And not, you know, many I find like it so much that they find that this is sort of where they want to go. This is the avenue they want to go down. They want to be a finance professional, but they really love this stuff so much that they want to go much deeper to the technology. And so sometimes they find their way back to finance after they've been deep into this kind of world. And sometimes, you know, they just see it as an enabler, which really, I think that's our top performing resources are those that really adopt these skills and these tools. I think same for organizations. That's where they're really seeing the value is people that can think kind of outside the box, try new ways of working, evolve in how they work, or be a leader that supports that kind of thinking. Those are really the top performers. So I would encourage anybody who has an interest in this to find ways to either fit it into their day job or pivot into this kind of work if they really find that this is what I'd rather be doing. I think that it opens up doors and opportunities.
Great. Well, Tabitha, definitely gave us a lot to think about. And thanks so much for joining me today.
Yes. Thanks, Heather.
That's our show for today. Join me back here next week for a new lineup of shows. On Tuesday, we're continuing our year-end toolkit series with a focus on audit committees. As many finance teams prepare to report to the audit committees, we want to arm you with the questions and hot topic issues that are top of mind this time of year. So that you never miss any of our audio content, follow the PwC Accounting Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. With two new episodes released each week, there's something for everyone. From thought leadership at PwC, I'm Heather Horn.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and they sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.